So I'm going to start right off by just confessing that I really like program evaluation, and I know that it scares a lot of people, and a lot of people don't like it, and I've had a lot of experience in Washington, especially with our local health organizations, feeling like, well, somebody's testing me, somebody's measuring me, that's icky. So I'm going to try to today give you some ways of thinking about program evaluation and some models that we have used very successfully that hopefully sort of take the edge off, make it accessible, and make it something that's fun. The reason that I love program evaluation is that, true confessions, is that I really believe that it helps every staff person find a way to fully engage in what we're doing. I think about what we're doing as an evolution. We don't know what's perfect today. We don't know what's going to be perfect in a year, and we shouldn't pretend to do that. So if we can set up frameworks and methods for gathering information about how what we do affects the people that we're trying to affect, then we're giving every person who's working on that a special piece of information to feel in control and to feel ownership and to feel that they can provide good customer service in the work that they do. And we free people up from feeling like they're supposed to figure out how to make it perfect and that we just keep striving to make it better. So just to start out a little bit with the environment that I'm working in Washington State, and I think it's probably representative of the environment that we are all working in or beginning to work in, because it really started several years ago with the federal GPRA. In Washington State, we have a very amazing governor, and a governor who has very high standards for herself and for everyone else. She came into office 3+ years ago. She's heading toward another election. And she created something that we refer to GMAP, which is Governance, Management, Accountability, and Performance. And there's a website here, and it describes it briefly. She believes that every state agency and program must be visibly accountable to Washington citizens. The governor's approach to accountability requires agencies to regularly measure and report the effectiveness of the services they provide so that problems can be identified and fixed. She is actively problem solving. She will have sitting in front of her in a GMAP session, and I've done 3 GMAP sessions. Our secretary is the one who actually does the presentation, but we provide all the information for her to do that. And she will sit with our Secretary of Health, Mary Selecki, which is a Department of Health, DSHS Secretary, and Healthcare Authority Secretary in front of her. And she will dive into the information, and she will ask very hard questions, and she will ask how we're working together and whether or not our health purchasing is reflective of our immunization program, our universal purchasing, and why our rates are so dang low. And she really gets into it. And as scary as that is, it is also truly helpful, because we have been able to engage with our state agency partners in a way that we never had before, because we didn't have entree to them. The other thing I wanted to share is Washington's Public Health Improvement Plan, which is something that our agency put into legislation many years ago, which is, in short, a way to define what local public health, which is autonomous in Washington State, and state public health should be doing in order to have a fully functioning public health system. So the way it plays out for us is that local public health and state public health have specific measures under the Public Health Improvement Plan that in many cases are not so much about outcome. They're really about how we do our work. And you're going to see in some of the evaluation models that I present the how we do our work. Do we engage the people that we're trying to serve? Do we get information from them about how impactful our work has been? And do we utilize that information then to make our services better? That's what we're really tested against in the Public Health Improvement Plan standards for state and local public health. There's websites for both of these, and they're pretty good websites, so if you're interested, you can go out and look at them. The first thing I wanted to present to you is an example of a logic model. And I chose this one, which is, I took a couple slides just doing some web searching for good documents, good models from the University of Wisconsin Extension. I thought they had some really nice materials related to program evaluation. So if you're interested, this is one of their models. There's another slide I have that's one of theirs. But the reason I like this is because it drills down in the boxes that are in the center under inputs what we invest, staff, other types of resources, time, money, research. Under the green box, outputs, when they include both activities and participation, what do we do and who do we reach or who are we trying to reach? And give you some questions so that you can use that to fill in your logic model. And then under outcomes, which is the impact, they have short, medium, and long term, and questions under each of those. My background is behavioral science, so I love the knowledge, attitude, practice, various theories, and this is structured around that learning, action, and conditions, social, economic, civic. So I'm going to show you some our examples of logic models for both the immunization program and our child profile system, and so that you can have a basic model that has you could fill in, and then you have the example of our program model, which, by the way, I think each program in the nation could probably tweak and use for their own whole immunization program logic model if you wanted to. Another way of thinking about the logic model that I have found is really successful with many of our staff is to think about it in terms of a so that chain. I'm going to have staff develop talk with parents of children 19 months of age so that they can identify what information needs they have, so that they can then develop an educational material that meets their educational needs or their information needs, so that we can then send the information out to the parents, so that the parents have good information to make good decisions, so that they take their child to the doctor, so that they get their child immunized on time. So there's lots of different ways that you can think about it, but basically, what are we trying to do? What are we trying to affect? How are we trying to do it? And then setting up questions or ways to measure that to assure that you're doing what you thought you were doing, it's occurring in the way you thought it should occur, and there is a change in knowledge, there is a change in attitude, and then ultimately there is a change in behavior. So along with the logic model, there are evaluation frameworks, and next slide after this, I'm going to try to tie the two together for you, because I think that's an area where a lot of people get confused. Your logic model is your sort of basic framework for what you're trying to do, and it can occur at a very high level, or it can occur at a very low level. So it could occur at your whole program level, or it could occur with regard to one activity that you're doing, the example of one activity being the educational activity that I just walked through. Then within that, you have to set up things that I like to think of as feedback loops. The image on the right, the plan, do, check, act cycle, is the one I like and the one I use because I think it's very simple and easy to use. The one on the left is CDC's model, which I think is comparable to the plan, do, act cycle. Both are intending to get you out there identifying who is the group we're trying to impact, talking with that group, getting information from that group about how your actions are affecting them or are not affecting them, and then utilizing that information to improve the services that you provide, and then doing the whole thing over again. It's when you do it over time, it becomes sort of this corkscrew, or like a phone line, for those of you who are old enough to remember what a telephone line looks like. And you just keep doing it over time, and you get better and better. And I think staff feel more and more empowered to improve their work and not feel like they are supposed to be striving for perfection and then maintaining perfection. So this, again, from the University of Wisconsin Extension, this is a little scary and a little messy looking, but I think it's a true representation of the overlay between a logic model and an evaluation cycle, because the yellow arrows show that these feedback loops could occur at any point in your evaluation cycle. they could occur as formative research, in other words, as testing out what you intend to do or gathering information about what you want to do before you even start any program. They could occur just as you initially start a program or an intervention, and they could definitely occur when you're at the point where you're hoping to see long-term outcome changes, like kids getting their immunizations on time. And that throughout the process, you can be using these feedback loops to improve what you're doing and tweak your activities. So this is the logic model for the Washington State Immunization Program and Child Profile. And I know it's a lot of information on the screen here, but the slides will be available after the conference, as always. So you're welcome to go out and grab this and play with it for your own immunization program. But to walk through at a fairly high level, we have inputs, which include our grant, the state immunization program staff and funds and other resources, state and local partners and organizations, the activities. So the at a high level, the activities that we do to try to improve health outcomes and increase immunization rates include assessment activities, prevention and promotion, quality assurance, clinical technical assistance, infrastructure development, policy development, surveillance, and outbreak control. We have outputs that include awareness, education, federal and state local programs, improved access, successful partnerships, immunization providers, quality vaccine services, adequate vaccine supply, and we have policy outputs, which are state and federal immunization recommendations and laws, advisory committee recommendations, State Board of Health rules. The State Board of Health is the group in our state that is responsible for immunization requirements. And then there are short-term, intermediate, and long-term outcomes that are really based on improved knowledge, attitude, and then behavior outcomes. Our long-term outcome, big one, is children, adolescents, and adults are immunized at the right ages, which will result in fewer illnesses and deaths from vaccine-preventable diseases, which will decrease immunization-related deaths and health immunization-related health disparities. To drill down to another level, so starting from a very high level of our whole program and then going to another level, a little bit lower, our Child Profile Immunization Registry and Health Promotion System is what I think of as a primary intervention to give parents information and prompt them to make a healthcare visit and get their immunizations. And it is a primary intervention for providing healthcare providers with the information they need to make decisions about immunizing children, hopefully immunizing them on time. And it's a shared resource so that it makes their work of tracking down historical immunizations easier. It is a clinical judgment tool. So for Child Profile, we have our inputs, resources, and activities. Our primary outputs are parents of Washington children 0 to 6 receive Child Profile health promotion materials. Our health promotion materials are more than an immunization reminder. They're a well child checkup reminder with, you know, first thing we say is you got to get your immunization, you got to get your well child checkup scheduled, and you got to get your immunizations. And for your age, here are the immunizations, or your child's age, here are the immunizations that they will receive at the next visit. And they include a comprehensive set of health messages intended for parents of children of specific age that include oral health messages, injury prevention messages, nutrition messages, safety messages, etc. And the other output is complete immunization records on Washington's children 0 to 6 in our immunization registry. You can read the short-term outcomes are listed there, and the intermediate outcomes include parents get their children, the 0 to 6 children, well child checkup immunizations on time, improved immunization rates in Washington, and physicians give the right immunization at the right time, which will reduce morbidity, reduce mortality, and improve quality of life. Now, to give you an example of an evaluation cycle that we're using within that logic model, is our materials development process for the 17 packages of materials go to parents of children 0 to 6 in Washington State that are aligned with the AAP recommended well child visit schedule. So at 15 months of age, those parents get a packet that say, congratulations, your baby's now 15 months of age. You need to schedule the next well-child checkup. Here's the immunizations that your child should receive, but check with your doctor or nurse about the immunizations because it's dependent on your child's history. And here's lots of other information about car seat safety, nutrition, oral health, et cetera, that might be helpful to you given the age of your child. Our materials development process and an evaluation cycle includes community-based formative research. So we start out defining our target audience and conducting focus groups to identify what they know and what they need to know more of, what they need more information about. We use that information to develop the materials and the messages. We pre-test the materials and the messages, both with our target population and with the healthcare professional community. We go into materials production then, and then materials dissemination is stage 5. And we have an evaluation that looks at what we're intending to do in terms of reach of the materials to the parents in our community, and we are tracking per county whether or not we're reaching 90% of the parents. 90% of the mailings are sent to parents and not returned to us. And in those communities where we're not reaching that, we have special outreach activities to try to increase the percentage of parents we reach. And then stage 6 is a more formal evaluation. We do a mailed parent satisfaction survey. And I'm happy to report that consistently over the last 10 years to 12 years, we have had around 85% of parents report that they read the information, they find it useful. And about 6 years ago, we started asking them if the mailed reminder helps them get their children immunized on time, this parent report, but they are saying yes. So this is a very successful program for us and something that not only parents say works for them and they appreciate, but legislators and other policymakers are very interested in. We modify our materials at least once a year, because we know it's, you know, what works today is not going to work a year from now because the research changes. As we educate the parent community, we have to take the materials up the next level. You know, what they wanted to know about 8 years ago isn't necessarily what they want to know about this year or next year. And so we've got to stay with it. We've got to stay with current research, and we've got to stay with parent need in order to maintain a high percentage of parents who read our materials and find them useful and feel that they are a call to action that they take and get their kids in for their well-child checkups and immunizations. So I hope that I've taken a little bit of the stress away from program evaluation and given you some models that you might find useful and showed you how to sort of interweave a couple of the models. Thanks.
Thank you. I think we have a few minutes for questions now, if anybody has some questions for Jana. I think I like what you said about trying to take some of the anxiety away, because my sense is that this is an activity that is, you know, creating some anxiety, and really I like to think of it as, well, you do a lot of things and you want to see if what you're doing is leading to results by asking all the questions that you're asking. One question that I have for you is, one of the things that I think seems to generate a fair bit of anxiety is logic models, and I was wondering if, as you've, you know, worked in your program and used them, people have come to see them as a really useful tool and something that people will kind of do automatically instead of resisting.
Thanks, Pascal. I would say to some degree, unfortunately, I've seen a lot of really illogical logic models. I don't understand the logic behind a 15-page logic model that just has tons of things on it. I really strive to and really encourage our staff to get it to one page. Even though our one-page logic models have a lot of boxes on them, I think it's something that you can study and you can kind of see that we're saying that A leads to B leads to C leads to D. So I think it is really challenging, and unfortunately I think that a lot of times people try to list everything they're doing in a logic model, which is not the logic behind a logic model. The logic is getting it up to its simplest form, and trying to create it in a way that helps other people understand what you're trying to do. And again, I think when you're successful in doing that, that it helps all the staff get behind it. And also, you know, you have to have a pretty high trust environment to do it in a way that doesn't result in each person seeing their job on a piece of paper, because that's not what's intended. But if they understand how the things that are on the piece of paper relate to the work they do every day, and there's, you know, you have a high trust environment, so they don't feel like they have to have the safety of the actual name or words on a paper that represents exactly what they do, then it'll be successful.
I really like, Jana, the "so that" translation, because I think even sometimes the terminology is intimidating. And I remember the first time a few years ago I heard the term logic model, and it just sort of made me go, I don't know what that is, and the person just started talking about it. And I think Pascal and Suchita are doing everything they can to take the intimidation out of the terminology, but I think if we say logic model and then maybe use something like, it just means we do this so that this, so that this, can make that sort of intimidation factor go away right away. So thank you for that.
And I think one of the important uses of logic models, in addition to forcing people to articulate why they do what they do, is that sometimes you realize that not everybody has the same idea about why we're doing what we're doing. And I've heard funny stories from other programs where they decided, okay, we're going to evaluate this activity that we're doing, and it turns out people had all kinds of theories about how this activity was supposed to lead to the desired outcome, or maybe even what the desired outcome was. So I think it's a useful tool in terms of making sure that people, you know, get to be all on the same page and how you're going to think about this, and then be able to articulate questions that are the right questions to ask.